Hello, it's Scott Manley here. It is June 19th. A week ago, SpaceX went public in the biggest IPO ever. It is time for another batch of deep space updates. And of course, we start out with rocket launches, where SpaceX, well, they have a whole bunch of Starlink launches that we're not going to talk about in detail. They launched from Vandenberg on the 7th, the 11th, and the 15th, and on Slick 40 in Florida from the 8th and the 12th of June. So that's five Starlink launches. But elsewhere in the world, other more diverse, more interesting, more talkable, discussable launches. On 9th of June, out of China, we have in Jichuan, there's a Landspace's Juche 2E, and this is another upgrade on their rocket. They've made some subtle changes to this. Now, this was launching the Qianfan direct-to-cell DTC-01 satellites. China are also working on their own cell phone satellites. Now, this is the second flight of the upgraded Block 2 Juche. Main thing is they're now using pneumatic stage separation to, basically not have to use pyrotechnics, and there's some changes to the engine design, and they now have the ability to, like, throttle down during the final step. However, that upper stage broke apart once it reached orbit, and a US Space Force confirmed that they are tracking the breakup of a Chinese rocket body. A number of debris and the track pieces are being incorporated. So far, it's not clear they are a threat to anything, but I understand that a number of Starlink satellites are having to make adjustments. 11th of June in China, again, we have a Long March 5 launching Tongsu Jishuxian 25 out of Wenchang into geostationary orbit. So, again, anything like this, this is an experimental secret satellite. It's known as Communications Technology Experimental Satellite number 25. We don't know very much beyond that it went to GEO. And this is a very big satellite as well, because it had to launch on a Long March 5 with the big, big 18.5-meter long fairing. Now, and here's a really interesting one. At the other end of the scale, Rocket Lab, they launched their HASTE launch vehicle, which is, of course, an Electron rocket. And HASTE is supposed to be for hypersonic testing, and that is typically suborbital. The idea is the payloads are going through the atmosphere at hypersonic speeds, collecting all that cool science data. Well, this particular mission threw a bit of a curveball. I mean, it was literally called curveball. And soon afterwards, some payloads were catalogued in orbit, despite this supposedly being a suborbital mission. I'm not sure what that means. Does it mean that one of the payloads had the ability to boost itself into orbit after being separated at hypersonic speed? It's not clear. The details that we got didn't include like enough tracking information for anyone to actually see what it is, and I think it may have disappeared from records now. But yeah, a suborbital launch, which wasn't. 12th of June in Japan, we have the H330S. This is the maiden flight of their all-liquid launch vehicle. This is the first rocket, I believe, to have launched to orbit in Japan, which is entirely fueled by liquid without any solid propellants on the side, right? So this was a small demonstrator. It basically, they take the H3 and they've now got three engines on it instead. These are the LE9 expander cycle engines. They generate 150 tons of thrust each. The rocket itself is a 271 ton rocket, 5.2 meters in diameter, 57 meters tall. And it was launching with very limited payloads. So they had a small payload adapter on there with a handful of small satellites like Petrel, Stars X, are sort of like innovative satellite technology demonstrator mission hardware. And of course, there was like a vehicle evaluation payload, which was on there as well. And something called HORN, which is an acronym for Hunting Orbital Normalizer. And it looks like a drag sail with a dubious acronym attached. And then 15th of June in China, we have the Kinetica 1 launch vehicle. Again, a whole bunch of solids slapped together, carrying 8 Gaofen satellites from Jichuan. These go into sun synchronous orbit. They are, I think, Earth observation satellites. They publish some cool images straight after. Half meter resolution from these small sat. But yeah, this is a constellation a bit like what Planet does in the US. And 16th of June in China, we have a Long March 3B/E launching Qijian 31 into geostationary orbit. Now, this was a return to flight mission. They failed back in January of this year. There was a third stage anomaly, which meant that the third stage and the payload ended up burning up. And no idea what the satellite is. It's just pitched as Space Environmental Exploration, which of course could probably mean military or civilian or both, but they don't want to tell us. Anyway, we know that the stage three is put into a 40,000 kilometer orbit, so that's a geostationary Earth orbit. 17th of June, there was a Long March 12 carrying 9 GOWANG satellites, or SatNet, a launch out of Wangchang. And that would otherwise be a pretty boring launch, but the press release announced that they were using a new higher energy kerosene that had been synthesized. Now, this is an interesting bit of chemistry here. So the Soviet Union actually did this in the 70s and 80s. They developed a fuel called Sintin, which would essentially, you would load it onto a regular rocket and you get extra performance. This fuel is supposed to give them something like 8 seconds of impulse. That's about 2.5% extra performance. And the way it works is the, kerosene is essentially a whole bunch of different carbon hydrocarbons, and they have all sorts of various structures. Now, turns out if you can bend the carbon chains into a very tight loop, then they want to unfurl. It's like a spring that you've coiled up, and when they break apart, they release the energy in there, and so you get free extra chemical energy. So it's they're cyclopropane rings, which are just curved a bit too tight, and they have release energy when they do this. So China's figured out how to do this. Now, the Soviet Union did this, and they pretty much stopped doing it afterwards because it was a whole bunch of expense for not that much extra performance. It's better to build bigger rockets, but still, there may be niches where this kind of technology is potentially useful. 17th of June, we had the Kuaizhou 11, and that's the bigger version of the Kuaizhou. It's 78 tons on the pad, 2.2 meters in diameter. And for a long time, the payload was listed as TBA. We weren't sure what would happen. There was a bunch of radio silence soon after the launch. We knew it went into sun-synchronous orbit, but we've now figured out that this was a launch for 8 satellites for Microspace, who are providing high-precision navigation services, supposedly able to get centimeter resolution precision. Now, the reason why they waited a long time to announce this was apparently it wasn't clear whether all the satellites made it or not. There might have been more satellites, but there was definitely some silence, and a number of objects have been catalogued. They may not all be active. Some of them may be still stuck on the booster. 17th of June, SpaceX launched a Falcon 9 out of Slick 40, carrying 3 satellites for AST Space Mobile. 3 of the large, these AST Space Mobile, they're doing direct-to-cell. Their satellites unfold this absolutely massive phased array antenna, which allows them to talk to cell phones. They clearly have a better solution compared to Starlink. They don't need nearly as many satellites, but you know what? SpaceX is really good at launching lots of satellites. 17th of June, we had an Ariane 64 launching out of Kourou, carrying 36 Amazon LEO satellites. And if you watch this thing, it arcs over. It does a serious hard gravity turn very early in the flight. And that's because this is using the new, better Block 2 Ariane 6. So the solid boosters have been upgraded. The solid boosters are the same as the first stage on the Vega rocket, but there's a upgrade coming along where they replace the P120s with the P160s, and this increases the thrust. It makes them about a meter longer, and they get 480 tons of thrust. You can really see the extra thrust to weight this gets early on in the flight. Now, obviously, these burn out, and then the core is still the same old hydrogen core on the Ariane. But regardless, this adds about 2 tons of capability to the orbital, the throw that this thing can handle. Apparently, there's so much demand for this for these boosters for the Ariane that Vega C deployment is way down the line at this point. It's lower priority than all these launches that have been paid for by Amazon. Anyway, finally, this morning, we had a SpaceX Falcon 9 launching out of Vandenberg Space Force Base with NROL-179. That'll be a bunch of Starshield satellites for the NRO doing, well, since it's the NRO, they are almost certainly using cameras to point down at the ground. If you follow space news like I do, you know that the same story can sound completely different depending upon where you read it. Algorithms and audience expectations shape what gets emphasized or left out, and it's easy to end up with only part of the picture. That's why I'm happy to say this video is sponsored by Ground News. Ground News gathers related articles from around the world in one place with context about the source's political leaning, reliability, and ownership, so you can compare coverage and quickly understand the bigger picture. Ground News isn't trying to sell you their version of the truth. They're not a news outlet, they're a news comparison platform. What they do is simple but powerful. They take any news story, and Ground News shows you how it's being reported across the political spectrum, left, right, and centre.
I like Grand News because it helps me see the full context of the stories that I'm reading, which is why I decided to work with them. Their founder is in fact a former NASA engineer, and I found their blind spot feed genuinely useful for spotting stories that one side of the political spectrum might be disproportionately covering or ignoring. For example, SpaceX's recent announcement of a plan to launch AI data center satellites in the next year isn't being reported by many left-leaning sources. Plus, if you want to focus on science or space, their interest pages make it easy to filter exactly what matters to you. To show you how it works, let's look at a recent story, the announcement of the NASA Artemis 3 crew, and plans to test commercial moon landers in Earth orbit. On Ground News, this story is being covered by over 300 sources, and its analysis of headlines and stories shows that while everyone treats the story positively, the right-leaning sources are celebratory, announcing that the race to the moon is on, while the left-leaning publications are more cautious, highlighting this as a complex next step towards being ready for the moon landing. It's the same event, but the framing changes what stands out and how you understand the stakes. I also like being able to quickly check factuality, ratings, and ownership details in the same view. Furthermore, all those comments on social media about the all-male crew haven't translated into polarized news stories. Their reporting on this is primarily factual reports of the NASA administrator taking to social media to defend the selection. Ground News gives you the tools to see the bigger picture for yourself, and yes, despite the name, they still cover space news thoroughly. If you want to try Ground News, you can subscribe and get 40% off the Vantage plan by scanning the QR code on screen, or you can go to ground.news/manly and have a new, better way of experiencing the news and staying informed. Now, back to the rest of the video.
And now, in the last couple of weeks, one thing which didn't launch again was ESAR Aerospace's Spectrum. They returned to the launch pad again multiple times, onward and upwards, stayed unfortunately firmly fixed to the pad in Andøya in northern Norway. So the message they got is they are standing down again because of off-nominal behaviour in the vehicle's fluid system, and they're analysing data to look at the root cause. Now, previously in April, they scrubbed because of a COPV. In March, they scrubbed because of a range violation. They are either cursed or maybe they don't want to see the rocket explode. No, I want to see these guys launch. I want to see them successful. And I'm very happy to say that they also announced recently that they got 270 million euros in funding. So that's great. You, onwards and upwards, as I said, they also have a deal to try launching these, or at least consider launching these from Canada. There's a deal with Maritime Launch. So you know, maybe we have European rockets coming to Canada. Meanwhile, by the way, the Bay Area's very own Astra, they announced, hey, we've shipped one of our Rocket 4s to the UK in a container. And, okay. This is obviously not a flight article. I know that they had been talking about launching from Saxe-Vord in the UK, perhaps to get some, you know, like funding from the UK government or something. But that was before, you know, Astra went out of business and then came back. So at this point, I don't know. I don't think they're there to launch this thing. I think they're there just to say, hey, look, we know how to ship rockets around, because they do know how to ship rockets around. They've been able to do rockets in shipping containers for a long time. They ship them up to Alaska. And so they would be in a good position to do this. But of course, we also have, Germany, we have the rocket factory Elsberg. They're also launching from Saxe-Vord. So maybe we'll see them launching sooner. Anyway, of course, as I said, probably the biggest space news. Well, it's probably the biggest, but it's still some pretty big space news in the last couple of weeks. SpaceX's IPO. And yeah, it started out at a stock price of $135. And very quickly over a couple of days rose to $200, and it's now back down to about $185. But yes, you know, this has been fabulously successful. It's been biggest IPO, I think, in history, something like that. Certainly, there's lots of news stories about how Elon Musk on paper is a trillionaire, but you know, we all know about the on paper side of things. Personally, I'm far more excited of all the stories of all the people that worked hard at SpaceX, that did cool stuff. They worked hard, they did neat little corners of the vehicle design or welding or whatever, right? They are now looking at stock that is worth a whole lot of money, you know, really life-changing amount of money for them. And, you know, more power to those people. I want to see, people that worked on this benefit from what they have done. So I'm excited because there's a whole bunch of people I randomly meet now that I know are now, you know, Going to be driving around in Ferraris. No, they're not. They're going to be driving around in Teslas. Anyway, myself, of course, I'm going to point out that I know a lot of you come to me for like space news. And I'm going to say I did not actually buy any SpaceX stock. I did consider it, but what happened? I mean, basically, okay, I got really busy. But I'm going to say also, since people come to me for news about spaceflight, I don't actually tend to invest in any space stuff. For the simple reason, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm looking at my stock price and saying, do I really want to talk about this rocket exploding? Because I would really like to talk about rockets exploding rather than worrying about my stock price. Now, you know, I do have stocks. They're handled by like a fund manager, and that's great because I don't need to worry about directly putting into money into stuff. Anyway, SpaceX, after their fabulously successful IPO, they immediately moved to finish up the acquisition of Cursor. And yeah, at this point, I'm going to say SpaceX is very much an AI company and a space company. And I'm mostly going to talk about SpaceX as a space company going forwards, but we got to remember they do also own Twitter. I'm also vaguely remembering that during the sort of IPO talks and interviews, there was mention that, by the way, SpaceX Starship still planning to launch in July for Flight 13, and they are still targeting August for Flight 14. More power to them, right? But yeah, you know, if you did well in the SpaceX IPO and you're a big space fan, you know, maybe you want to sell a share and buy the Lego NASA Hubble Space Telescope set, which is apparently coming in August. Yeah, that's a cool thing to do with your money. Just one share. That's all it would take to buy $130. Okay, never mind. That's not officially confirmed, but I saw that. And yeah, I do have a Hubble in there, but this one is going to be a whole lot better. Anyway, so in other SpaceX news, they also had started preparing to build out Slick 6 at Vandenberg. Now, this is a storied launch site. This was where the manned orbiting laboratory they were supposed to launch from. That would be where they literally had a space station in polar orbit. And, you know, they would dock astronauts to it and they would run the cameras. And that then became the launch site for the space shuttle on the West Coast, which of course never happened as well. It eventually became the launch site for Delta IV. Now those structures have been demolished and they are going to raise it and replace a lot of the stuff for your SpaceX launches, which for now means Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy. We don't have a Falcon Heavy capability on the West Coast. It is interesting that that would give us two launch sites on the West Coast for Falcon 9s when they, you know, ramped back or they rolled back to one single launch site on the East Coast. At some point, I fully expect we'll hear about a Starship launch site on the West Coast. And so the other really, really big news, as far as I'm concerned, is the details that were revealed on Artemis 3. And I have already made a video about this. You have probably already seen it. But just in case you don't know, the backup astronaut is going to be Bob Hines. The backup for Artemis 2, Andre Douglas, becomes a payload specialist on Artemis 3. Frank Rubio is another payload specialist. The European Space Agency's Luca Parmitano from Italy is the pilot, and Randy Bresnik will be the commander. Now, this is going to be a low Earth orbit mission. They've already discussed that they have the spacer. There's no upper stage on the SLS. This is going to put the Orion spacecraft into low Earth orbit, whereupon it will dock with the Blue Moon spacecraft, but it's not really a Blue Moon. It's not a Blue Moon Mark 1, it's not a Blue Moon Mark 2, it is something with the Blue Moon Mark 2 cabin, and it has some structure on top which we understand will provide, you know, propulsion, power, avionics and stuff like that, but it is not, doesn't have any cryogenics on board. It's not going to have BE-7 engines to be testing there. So this is something weird, Franken spacecraft, one of a kind, that is entirely being used to test operations, to test docking, to test the interior with these crew. So this can remain on orbit for up to 90 days. By the sound of things, by the way, it could launch on almost any rocket, like any rocket that's wide enough. It doesn't need a Blue Origin New Glenn, although by the time this needs to launch, I would hope that they've got New Glenn launching again. So they will operate on that mainly, and then later on, once they've established they've got that, they'll launch a Starship, which will have an on-orbit capability of only 2 days. This will be a standard V3 Starship with a docking port attached. And by the sound of things, they may have figured out how to put it on the front. They may just slap it on the side. The details are still a bit fuzzy on that, but they will dock with this, and they won't be able to board it. It's just going to be show that they can dock with this, fly around it, look at it, you know, gasp in awe at something this big in space that isn't the space station. And then they'll undock and then the Starship will land, hopefully. Hopefully they've sorted that all out by that point. But the other thing that came out of this is that plans for SpaceX landing on the moon will be for the Orion spacecraft to meet the lunar Starship in low Earth orbit and then dock with that. And then the lunar Starship will carry out the translunar injection boost, take them down to lunar orbit, leave the Orion there, land on the surface, come back up, meet the Orion, and then the Orion heads home. This is a radical change in SLS because obviously SLS was designed to go to the moon and now it's just carrying Orion to low Earth orbit. It's almost like something that could be done, say, with New Glenn or, with Vulcan. Anyway, another part of this mission, of course, will be testing the Axiom spacesuits. And the news came out that Axiom announced a critical part of their suit in a flashy ceremony with Prada. Now, Prada, we know that they are actually working with Axiom. And sure, Prada are a fashion brand, right? That doesn't mean that they are all about looks. You know, when you're doing fashion, there is a lot of technology that can be involved. And fashion houses obviously understand this. They have people that understand making soft goods, manufacturing processes. So, yeah, Prada are doing the undergarments, the liquid cooling garments. And, you know, we have these in spacesuits for a long time. They're very important to keep astronauts cool. You essentially run water through the surface to keep them at an ideal temperature for the amount of physical exertion. And without this, you know, you can get into real trouble really fast because it can be hard to cool a spacesuit. So they showed this off and it will be part of the space. So you can say that you're wearing Prada in space. Now, earlier, one of the launches I talked about was the Ariane 6-4 launch carrying 32 Amazon LEO satellites. That would be a full 1% of the targeted constellation. And as of right now, Amazon has something like 10% of the constellation in orbit, which is a problem because according to their deal with the FCC, they needed to have 50% launched by the end of July. Now, what they have done is they have actually come up with a deal that will get them through this particular thing. The idea is they were given this spectrum and they have to use this radio spectrum and they don't want to let other people use this radio spectrum because, you know, then they might have some sort of priority. So basically FCC has said, okay, look, we'll let you do this. We'll let you get away with only having 10% of your constellation up there. But if there is any, you know, you have to cede exclusive use of your frequencies until you have the rest of the constellation put together. So SpaceX could, in theory, use chunks of these frequencies if they're not interfering with an Amazon spacecraft. So this was something that, you know, started back in about 2020 when all these big constellations were being announced. The FCC said, like, listen, you can't just, you know, acquire use of these frequencies and then not launch the spacecraft. You have to actually show you can launch 3,000 spacecraft because we don't believe that's possible. Meanwhile, of course, SpaceX has handily eclipsed that. But that's what happened. That's why there was a deadline. Now, yeah, talking about large numbers of objects in low Earth orbit, I want to talk about LEO Labs. Now, they are in Silicon Valley. They are a startup that does space tracking using radars. And actually, a guy I know, Ed Liu, you may have seen him on this channel. He was one of their co-founders. He's the CTO. They just had a press release about how they ship their radar system in a shipping container like to Asia, so that they can actually operate this 3D scanning S-band radar to pick up pieces of hardware in orbit. And this is important because, say, you have China launching a spacecraft, it can take several hours before the Earth rotates to a position where that satellite's track passes through this. So it takes, you know, it adds hours of uncertainty and it can mean it can be hard to connect a launch to a specific satellite. And so being able to redeploy the radars to wherever they need to go is a big deal. It's kind of funny. I was browsing, like, I think it was on Space News, and they had, like, in the sidebar, literally an ad for this shipping container with a radar in. And I would love one, but I don't have a place for it or the money to operate it. And if we're talking about big radio hardware, well, NASA has released a heavily redacted report of the Deep Space Station 14 mishap. That was where a large 70-meter antenna in Goldstone, California, which was being used to communicate with Juno, got seriously damaged due to, poor training, tribal knowledge, misunderstanding. It is now a Type A mishap because it's going to cost $4 million worth of damage. Essentially, the dish It rotated and it rotated past its stops and it kept on rotating and the cables and stuff just wrapped themselves around the base. And, you know, they damaged the cables, they damaged the cooling system, the fire suppression system. A lot of water and glycol leaked out and contaminated the area. And then when they were trying to stow it, the stow command they sent made it turn even further. So the dish was down. It's going to remain down because now they're going to just go ahead with a bunch of upgrades. It'll be back in service in 2028. Astrobotic had a press conference where they unveiled their completed Griffin lander ahead of the environmental testing and ultimately their mission to land the flip rover on the moon. This will be NASA's first moon-based mission. And of course, this is only going to be the second flight for Astrobotic. It's going to be a whole lot bigger. And yeah, we hope that this is successful because at some point they're supposed to be carrying some other hardware. Another cool video came from Anduril. That is Palmer Luckey's defense company, and they have a network of 400 telescopes deployed around the globe to basically investigate satellites and stuff in space. And what they showed was a Falcon, what they said was a Falcon Heavy launch of Viasat performing a routine thrust event, which it is not a routine thrust event. This is a routine propellant dump event to save the, you know, to pacify the stage, right? It makes this spiral plume because what they're doing is essentially the thing is spinning and they're dumping out the propellant so that it spreads over as wider area as possible. This happens in geostationary launches because they put the stuff into geostationary orbit and then the thing isn't going to deorbit anytime soon. So they basically dump anything in it that would make it dangerous. It's still a very cool video and yeah, gives you an idea of the capabilities that the US has to observe satellites in orbit. Aurora, now they have their little Dawn space plane and they announced that they have $25 million in funding, which frankly isn't a lot of money, but this is funding for a rocket-powered drone space plane that can carry space-like experiments on suborbital trajectories. And it's really neat. I love this thing. I love space planes and I love the fact that this is such a small thing. You can fuel it up on a regular runway. It uses hydrogen peroxide thrusters. It shouldn't require a huge amount of ground equipment. It doesn't require a big runway. You see this thing, it just takes off and goes vertical. So I think it's cool that they revealed this, that they've got this, and they're going to be operating this more going forwards. Another cool video that we got. Well, this is a super cool video. So yes, obviously, Blue Origin. Yeah, after last month where they had the largest explosion in the history of the Cape, they've released a refreshingly boring video showing a 2,500 second hot fire of a BE-7 engine. That's a 41 minute test fire. That is the longest static fire for a rocket engine as far as I know. So this is obviously good for the BE-7, but I'm going to say a lot of the problems with engines are transients on startup and shutdown. For example, starting up a BE-4 engine while your entire rocket is sitting fueled on the pad. Yeah. We know that Blue Origin have been working on the cleanup and prep for like rebuilding the launch site. I still don't know what, you know, while they've talked about launching before the end of the year, I still think it's too early to get a handle on whether they will actually make that date. So Relativity Space is going to send a mission to Mars and they're working with NASA on a public-private partnership, which will be relatively low cost to NASA overall. NASA will be providing the scientific instruments in the form of the Aeolus Atmospheric Science Payload. It's going to include like a Doppler wind system, temperature sensor, thermal limb sounder and radiometric sensors and a wide field camera. And yeah, it's going to be doing something similar to MAVEN, I think, in many ways. It's going to be looking at the sort of atmospheric operations or behavior. So anyway, this is planned to fly in 2028. I'm not sure how likely they are to get this, but Relativity are going to build the spacecraft to operate it. They're also going to provide, by the way, telecommunications from this platform. They're going to have the launch vehicle, do the cruise operations, and Mars or NASA are going to be in charge of the actual science stuff once they get to Mars. And I find this fascinating that now that SpaceX have pivoted and they're going all in on space data centers, which what, you know, Eric Schmidt said that the Relativity was going to do. Relativity has now said, we're going to Mars. Yeah, funny how that works. Okay, so now we're getting to the end of this. We got some stuff to look forward to. First of all, I've just seen that the Lynx spacecraft, the Swift rescue mission, has taken off on the L-1011 TriStar from Mojave. It's headed off to Kwajalein, get ready to launch. There was a press conference earlier in the week where they discussed the hopes, the chances of this mission succeeding. Again, I'm amazed that it is ready for launch this early. It is fantastic that they've been able to move this fast. And it is the most exciting mission of the summer, as far as I'm concerned. In the next couple of weeks, pay attention to China. Their Tianwen-2 spacecraft is getting close to their target. There's an asteroid which is in a horseshoe orbit, right, locked near to Earth. It's a quasi-satellite. It is one of the smallest objects that has ever been visited, by the way. And so we might start seeing some images from that, another close-up images from a member of the solar system. And also, if you're in Arizona, I'm going to be doing my annual Asteroid Day pilgrimage where I'm off to Meteor Crater. I'm going to be giving talks and I'm going to be hanging out with astronauts and I'll be saying hi and whatever. You look online, you'll find the details. Maybe I'll see you there. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.